Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I would like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how you doing over there?
Well, our dogs have returned to normal after the 4th of July.
Yeah, that's a little tough on some of our four-legged friends for sure. And it was quite a year out there. I mean, there I don't know if somebody tracks firework sales, but I would say there was no lack of sales this year.
You speak of that. We actually did a story this week, Newstalk870.am. Now, it's based on 21 numbers because they don't have. But we ranked 12th in money spent per person. The company that I, the place I got the stats from, they did, the way they did it was, this is how much was spent per capita.
Was that by state, you said?
Yes, state by state, $2.32 per person in Washington. Multiply that by 7.51 million. We spent about $17 million on fireworks last year, and this year expected to go up.
So we were ranked 12th. Okay, so we are celebrating America's birthday. Yes, okay, that was incredible. Well, anyway.
South Dakota was number two. Missouri was number one. $13 per person.
Wow, why am I not surprised a little bit about there? And per capita, maybe a little smaller population. Now, I will say we might be ranked 12th, but West Richland might be ranked first if we break
in
it
in the universe.
If we break it down by cities, we had an amazing view of West Richland and or as some people called it last week, Little Beirut over there. So it was, yeah, they put on quite a show, and it was definitely readily apparent that people love celebrating America's birthday. So
yes,
so I'm glad you're safe. The family's returning to normal, and all that is good. We had a blast. Like I said, this community does it upright, so that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Now, before we get into today's topic, we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity real estate house. Now, this one from robreport.com, this one a little bit different, coming out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so what you've got here is you've got an original Spanish Pueblo Revival style home, to your typical New Mexico style there. But this house was formerly owned by co-founder Paul Allen. Co-founder of Microsoft, Paul Allen, and before that, famous artist Georgia O'Keeffe. And so I got to tell you, this place is on the market for $17.5 million. Now, last year, because, you know, Paul Allen had passed away a few years ago. I think the estate's settling stuff up. Last year, that property was $5 million more. They've had a $5 million price reduction. So it was coming in like $23.5 million last year. Now, this place is absolutely incredible, though. Both the artist, George O'Keeffe, and then Paul Allen, they said the agent that has it listed now is the same agent that sold it to him over 20 years ago. And he said they had looked and looked at properties for 18, 19 months, and they walked into this one, and he was like, done deal. This is the one. But it's a 1930s built. But listen to this. It's a 20-acre retreat. Here is a description that I'm not used to seeing in homes, but the typical 6-bedroom, formal living dining room, game room, library, solarium. But listen to this. It also includes a basement tunnel system with an elevator that provides maintenance infrastructure to the building. Okay, I can probably tell you on one hand, and I probably could get rid of a few of those fingers, how many homes that I've been through that have to have a basement tunnel system for maintenance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this place just seems absolutely incredible. And I guess when Allen purchased the house, it was already in good shape, but he took it to absolutely the next level. I mean, it has a separate carriage house that was redone in 2015 that houses basically its own theater room, bathroom, extra bedroom, all for just the theater room cottage. Then on top of that, the property comes with a business license for a conference center because there is 21 bedrooms in the guest quarters that previous owners would use. They would rent it out to nonprofits and then allow them to come hold like an offsite retreat at this property. And the property can be split into two parcels if desired. I mean, this place just goes on and on. Absolutely an incredible property. Not the typical, though, crazy property that we feature that is over the top mega mansion, but just, you know, a lot of this, if when you look at the pictures, is hidden by greenery and landscaping and stuff. I would hate to think the maintenance cost. It's just one of those properties where, like, everything is absolutely perfect, but not overstated.
Yes.
So that is our crazy. So, McKay, if I could borrow at $17.5 million, if I could borrow $17.2 million from you, I think we can go down there.
Well, what we could
holding
do
our conferences.
Is, you know, Washingtonians spent $17 million on fireworks in 2021.
Yes.
So just take that, and there you go.
And there we go. There we have it. Well, we always like to temper that with back to our real life local real estate story. And this week, folks, I got to tell you, end of July or end of June, 1st of July numbers coming in. And the big story here in Tri-Cities is inventory. Inventory finally getting back to, we just saw last week, climb over that 500 mark. We had gotten as low as high twos, like 290. You know, 4 or 5 months ago, and then we started climbing back. We've had a lot of good inventory put on the market. Builders have gotten some finished product that they have available on the market. So sitting at about 502 active listings, it's been a bit since we've seen that, and love to see inventory trending in that direction. So how does Lance come up with the radio show topics? We always talk about it. I during the week, I take notes from calls that we have from clients, talk to the agents, see what trends are out there. And this is one I just wanted to touch on a little bit because a couple different things. So we've been getting a large, large number of calls, and you probably know friends and family that have done this. And that is, over the last 2.5 to 3 years, it has become very, very, I don't necessarily want to call it trendy, but we can just say kind of a, you know, a wave of sales that has been happening with larger parcels of acreage property, land that has been sold. And some of this was really caused by and spurred on by the pandemic, right? So a lot of people said, man, all of a sudden they think, gosh, it's not great to be jammed in the city when everything is shut down. I want a little bit of space. Maybe I want some chicken so that I have some fresh eggs. Maybe I want, you know, to make my micro farm. Whatever the reason may be, we have seen this trend of really larger 5, 10, 20, 50, 60 acre parcels being sold. And so, and then in fact, just in the last 3 weeks, we had 4 or 5 calls of people coming from the western side of the states that are more populous and looking for some of that breathing room. And so one of the questions we get a lot are, what outer line areas do you service, Lance? And then what makes you guys a great choice for servicing those? So I just wrote down a few examples of sales.
Well, let's get out your globe.
Yeah, but let's look at, in the last 6 months, I wrote down some great examples of some areas that we service. Connell, for instance, Basin City, Warden, Colotus, and then going up the valley the other way, lots and lots of sales in Bend City. We also service Prosser, Grandview, and we've had some sales more recently in Sunnyside. So then you go the opposite way and you go down to Patterson area, where we've had some listings and some sales down near the river there in the Patterson area. And then not to mention Burbank and Wallula Junction out there. So our service area is pretty broad. And I wanted to get that out there because we have had so many of these inquiries about buying land. So I thought it would behoove us a little bit to talk about some of the differences and factors that people need to be considering, because we get this discussion a lot, and some of the different things that we've sold people or the ideas that, that they have. I mean, I can't tell you how many there are. I mean, think I've had people buy 5 acres to grow different plants for specialty oils. We've sold property for people that want to grow small batch organic crops. We've sold properties to people that want to strictly do grass-fed beef. I mean, I've seen a ton of this type of stuff in the last 2 to 3 years. But you need to take certain things into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
The area and what's going on in that area. And we have agents that specialize in these type of sales. I can't just send you somebody that just got licensed 3 months ago and roll them out to Colotus and think that they're going to know some of the things that that person that's going to be growing beef, cattle, and that type of stuff need to know. No, you need to be talking with an agent and a brokerage that has experience with that type of stuff. Maybe they've yes. grown up in it, done a number of transactions that involve that, because there are things that are going to be different. The first thing that I wrote down is the size of parcel. Now, I know this seems like a no-brainer. Lance, why are you putting that down as the number one thing? Well, there's a couple things that people need to consider with that. Now, some people like the idea of acreage because they don't have to maintain it. Maybe it's dry land. But if there are maintenance costs associated with that acreage, is there annual shredding that's needed? Is a portion of the property in the CRP government program where you have to re-enroll
Conservation
every 10
Reserve
years?
Program.
Exactly. So, you know, what does your maintenance look like if those contracts are coming up? Are they likely to be renewed? If they are you going to have to do any sort of replant? There's a lot to consider with that. But one of the other big reasons, the second thing other than the maintenance then that you're going to be dealing with that we wrote down with the size, is how close are your neighbors? Okay, that is a huge thing to consider, because here's a great example. I've helped a number of people over the years buy land parcels because they just wanted to have a place to go shooting, to do target practice.
Yes.
And to go shooting. And generally we try to find parcels that are in the middle of nowhere. It makes sense, right? For safety purposes, for noise, but here's the question that I ask. Are you that guy looking for the parcel to do shooting and range practice, or are you the person years ago that went to the middle of nowhere to get away from that guy so that you don't have to hear that all the time?
Yes.
Now, that's going to be different if you have 200 acres surrounding you, or your land backs up to DNR land, Department of Natural Resource land, to where it's not as likely that someone's going to come in and buy a 20-acre parcel. Mm-hmm. And then there won't be, with these parcels, a lot of people that live closer into town or haven't bought land before. They're used to CCNRs, and that's covenants, conditions, and restrictions on properties that prevent certain things. And a lot of times when we're talking about someone coming out to buy land, they're buying land to get rid of CCNRs, so they don't have that. However, you still have to consider, what does it look like when your neighboring parcel gets sold to somebody? It might look great right now, but you have to drive by that parcel or three of these to access your land. What does it look like when those parcels get sold to somebody else who might not be as neat and clean as the last person? And there's no CCNRs, meaning they can park whatever they want out there. Dump trucks, broken down cars, you know, old trailers, whatever it is, you know, for those same reasons, you're going in that direction. Somebody else might be for a reason you don't like. So a lot of things that the scenarios we end up walking through with clients in these situations is just some of these scenarios, and then showing them areas where we've seen these type of things happen. So that's a huge consideration. The problem with today, McKay, is that I think I'm going to get one more, but we're coming up against our first break, and I wrote down 8 points in our first half of the show. I've just gotten through point number one. Okay.
A two-part show.
This could be an issue. But point number two, and we can speed things up a little bit, but the first one was so important. But point number two is, are there any water rights associated with this land? Now, like, for instance, if it's farm ground or larger tracts, are you looking at dry land ground or are you looking at irrigated land? And if it's irrigated land, what do those water rights look like? You know, are they junior rights? Are they senior rights? You know, it can go on and on. And so this is definitely something that needs to be considered in those situations. And I mean, people have ideas, right? But I take a lot of these calls, and some of these calls, I mean, no offense to the West Side, but they just came from the West Side. I mean, I had a guy call me, you know, last week, and he's like, hey, I need to get 20 acres of dry land farm. And I said, well, what, like, actual that's being farmed? Like, what are you going to do with that? was my first question, you know? And he's like, well, I think I'm just going to come occasionally and park my trailer on it for like camping and then see how beautiful it is. And I'll just lease it out to another farmer, you know, that had it before. And I said, well, the problem with this situation is, number one, there's only a few of those examples that are for sale right now. And number two, the type of parcel you're looking for that you want, I don't know if I'm going to be able to convince that person to deal with you. Like, I don't know on their 4,000 acre farm, if they want to be bothered on that 20 acres when you do show up. And they're trying to combine or they're trying to seed or spray for. So there are so many of these type of issues that come up when we look at this, at this portion. But water rights associated with the land, huge thing. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the water, but we're not talking about the farming water rights. We're going to talk about domestic used water rights when we come back.
Right here.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Today we've been talking about some of the factors to consider when purchasing land. I mean, I can't tell you, McKay, how many people over the last 3 years we've helped, and granted, costs have changed there a little bit.
Yeah.
But sell their house and move to Idaho. I mean, people that are listening to the show and hearing me, you know, they're like, I mean, our phone would just ring. We would just sit at the office and take calls. Hey, can you come over? I'm selling my house and moving to Idaho. Hey, can you come over? I'm selling my house and buying land in Idaho to build on. I mean, it just has kind of been rampant the last couple of years with kind of that migration trend there. But whether it's rural property that you're looking at, and we went over a bunch of the rural areas that we service around Tri-Cities, or cabin or recreation property, we talked about the size of parcel being so important, and then water rights associated with the land, number two. The third thing I wrote down is, what is going to be your proximity to recreation water, whether it's the river, a lake? What are you looking for out of that property? Because it's almost going to be more like, it's almost always more likely to be more expensive if it's on the water. But what are you using the property for? Do you go swimming a lot in the lake or the river? Fishing, is that something you're into? Boating being another situation to be looking at and considering in those situations. And kind of going along that lines with the boating side, but even the swimming side, is very close to that proximity to water that I wrote down. The fourth thing I wrote down was shoreline characteristics. So if you are planning on using it for boating, sometimes you'll see property and you're like, oh, hey, that's on the water. But then when you get there, it's like super shallow and muddy for the first 300 feet. And then you're asking yourself the question, well, can I build a dock? What shoreline management, you know, area is this in? Like, for instance, if you looked at like around here in Tri-Cities in the Columbia River, you know, does this fall in, say, like the McNary shoreline management area?
Yeah.
And then if it does, like, for instance, right now, McNary's going through redoing the shoreline management plan with a lot of things potentially changing or focuses changing. So do you currently know what that looks like? Have you looked at what the requirements are if you might think you're going to get a dock, but there might not be any more dock permits available. And so you've really got to look at that process of what that's going to take, what the shoreline characteristics are like. And then if it's not on the water and you decide to go a little bit off the water where you might get a little more value, where's your closest access point then to the water? Where, you know, where's public access at? Where's the closest park at or the closest boat ramp at? So big, you know, big things to consider in that situation. The fifth thing I wrote down. Now, I know we're talking about getting out of town. The fifth thing that I wrote down is, what is your proximity to town? Because there's out of town and then there's completely off the grid. And a lot of times people, it can be romanticized and amazing to be way off the grid. But then how far do you have to drive for your groceries? How long are you willing to stock up and take with you? Are you prone to any sort of medical issues or doctor's appointments that you need? Is there an ambulance service in the area? So proximity to town can be a big thing to consider when you're looking at land in these situations. Sixth point that I wrote down that a lot of times people underestimate cost on or are not aware of is, how far is it for electrical and water? And yes. When I say water, if you're drilling a well, how deep are you going to be drilling in that situation? What does that look like? Are there any property owners around that have had to drill? And then where is power? And so is it a mile away? Am I going to have to lay a mile of wire? And if anybody's looked at the cost of wire recently, you will know that this process can get expensive really quick. Am I going to have to lay a mile of wire? And then because of the length of the run, am I going to have to add transformers along the way? What does that look like? And then if that is not feasible, how expensive is my solar system and battery system going to have to be to run an entire cabin or recreational facility or house if that's going to be your primary area? So That's a big, big cost situation where some people will be walking along, they'll see a for sale sign, they're on vacation, they're up at, you know, they're up outside of Cleome and they went to Suncadia and everything's great and they're on a hike. And then you find out that you bought this property and, you know, the cost, the bid to put electrical up there was from 4 years ago, and now you go to look at it again and it's quadrupled in price. Some of the things you can do to protect yourself when you're buying land like that is, we highly recommend to our clients a feasibility contingency period, a very broad feasibility contingency period that allows you to research some of these type of situations. Now, the seventh thing that I wrote down, I don't know if people like are going to think this is amazing or people are going to think that it's crazy that I put this right after access to fresh drinking water and electricity. But I did put down number seven that we run into this all the time is there cell phone or service or internet access at these type of properties? Now, a lot of these properties, there's not. And sure, there is a ton of technology to
HughesNet.
Say that there will be. Yep. And what's the other one? Starlink?
Yeah.
Is that the other one? So, okay. But I've talked to a lot of people where they were on 8-9 month waiting list for some of those services. And then it was maybe, shall we say, not as reliable as they thought it would be. So just something to consider. What does that look like? Because if you are going to be off the grid or remote for a while, you know, so often all of our banking per se, you know, and some of our business or if you're trying to get a hold of people, a lot of that really comes down to the cell service and the internet connection. What's your plan going to be for an extended period of time in that situation? The last point is, we wrapped up and I kind of rushed through some of these last points just so I could get them down so people would have just a little bit of a checklist to think about when they're looking at these land purchases. And the last thing that I wrote down that is often overlooked and can become a serious issue is, what is the road access like?
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number of parcels that end up being in what they call landlocked, which there's laws and issues and regulations that go along with that. But the problem in those situations becomes then, what does the easement look like for access to property? Are you using a recorded easement to cross someone else's land to get to your land, or worse, unrecorded, and then trying to prove that and get, I mean, people move out here for a reason, and it is not so that you can be on their land. I will tell you that generally in this situation does not go over very well, and people become very protective of that. And so you really want to know, what does your road access look like? Is it county maintained? And then even bigger sometimes is it not county maintained? Do five property owners or parcels, do they have a singular road that they have a road maintenance agreement on to maintain the road? And I don't mean the road by road maintenance agreement, I don't mean that, gosh, you know, when we get some potholes out there, Billy always pulls out his tractor and fixes them for us. Well, that is sometimes what people think is a road maintenance agreement until Billy and his tractor leave and sell their property, and then no one's maintaining the road. So if they say there's a road maintenance agreement in place, we always encourage people, get your hands on that, see what it looks like. And then what happens if, you know, say maybe somebody has been maintaining it, like in that example I gave. But what happens if they stop? What's the worst case scenario? What does it officially say? So, and then if you have to put in your own road and it's, you know, hundreds, thousands of feet long, and there's switchbacks and maybe drainage that comes into play, that can add up in a hurry. I've seen people buy before, and I'll just tell you this real example, real Tri-Cities example. I've seen people before buy $70,000 lots and have to put in $120,000 driveways.
Wow.
Okay. And that is not an embellishment. That is a very real scenario. And it was on land and it was rural and in a situation like this. So just be aware of what can potentially happen in those situations. We have experts on site with the Kenmore team that deal with a lot of these issues and have been through it with a number of folks. Help them look at what they need to know when they're going into a situation like that. If you're considering a purchase like that, or you have a unique property like that to sell in an outlying rural area, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message. They'll get that over to us, and we would love to help you out in that situation. With that being said, I'm going to go find some more inventory out there to put on the market, and there we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.